does a pastor or somebody in ministry be bivocational and keep that balance?
Well, you know, it's going to be a challenge, but it's going to continue to be a challenge even when you're not bivocational. Okay, so you have a period of time, and I guess that's something you work out if you have a family. You talk. I was, you know, there was a time I was working three jobs to just survive, but we're all in it together. We all understood that what I was doing for everybody. And I think you've just got to, you know, work out what you can do, and maybe learn it while you're bivocational, and don't be thinking, well, once I'm not doing this, it'll be easier. It may not be, because other things will come along that will place demands upon you. Okay, with growth will come greater demands on you. Well, you say, well, we want growth. We do. We do. We want converts. We do. We certainly do. But with that will come greater demands upon you. And so you will learn that. Now, it's normal in life to have some missteps. And they're not fatal. They're just opportunities to learn. Okay. No, it doesn't matter how wise you are or how brilliant you are, how much Bible you know. You will not avoid every misstep in life. Okay, but they're not mortally wounding. They're lessons to learn. And so you might learn along the way how to adjust that. That was a very abstract answer, but that's the best I can do.
In the passage we read, Jesus' family was questioning what he was doing. What would you say to family who's doing that now?
Well, I don't know what I'd say to the family. But what I would say to someone who's dealing with that, you're dealing with something that many people do. And all you can do, I think, is try to humbly explain yourself. But often that is not enough. Often that is not considered, you know, really what they want. They want you to do what they want you to do. And no answer is probably going to be the right answer. But I think all you can do is just humbly explain, I need to be doing this, you know, and just keep going. I don't think there's the special answer that if you say it, they'll be fine. That's unlikely to be.
Is there something in the beginning of your ministry, looking back, that you wish you would have maybe accomplished or just been more prepared in a certain area?
There's probably a lot of things. I found that I learned a lot of lessons the hard way. And looking back now, I think that was foolish. But I didn't have the same head I have now. I did some foolish things. I was not always good to some of my people. Sometimes I tried to get too involved in their life, and that was out of jurisdiction. And one of the things that will most help you in ministry is the concept of jurisdiction. And jurisdiction is understanding what is under you and what is not. Okay, remember a man comes to Jesus and he says, can you speak to my brother about the inheritance? There was a contention about the inheritance. And Jesus really, would he have known the answer? Yes. Could he have said, well, it's this, but he didn't. He said, this has nothing to do with me. I'm not going to answer this. And there are some things you could answer and you could say and you could tell, but you should not. You should not. It's not your jurisdiction. And if you'll settle that, that will deliver you from a lot of things. And when you hear about the church down the road doing this, you'll be able to say, that's not my jurisdiction. And you'll find there's enough in your jurisdiction to keep you busy your whole life, that you don't have to be trying to run things that are not given to you. Okay, so there's a Bible truth there. What is given to me? Many times I say to myself, when I start thinking something, I say what Jesus said to Peter, what is that to thee? What is that to thee? It has nothing to do with you. I'll say to myself, I'm thinking, and then look, what is that to thee? You know, you're right. Okay, and if you sort that out, that'll deliver you from a lot of grief. And I think sometimes I cross lines of jurisdiction. People particularly do it in the ministry. Some people believe they just have jurisdiction over everybody. You know, everybody. We have that in Thailand. You know, I arrived in Thailand 18 years ago, just really not knowing anybody, just kind of starting out. And I was known in other countries, but not Thailand. And I got there and I got invited to a meeting, and a man came up to me, and he was from somewhere over here, and he shook my hand, and in the all in one go, he said, "My name is, and I went to this school, and where did you go to?" That was the opening handshake. And I went, "I didn't go anywhere." And then he said, "My job is I'm in this position over all the independent Baptists in Thailand." And I just moved past that. Now, that caused a little bit of grief because I wouldn't play ball. I just walked off the field and said, "You know, I'm just going to go serve the Lord." Okay, but you'll find that in many places, people step outside their boundaries of jurisdiction. And it's the single biggest thing that causes conflict between churches and pastors and staff on a church. So settle the question of what is given to you and what is your jurisdiction, and live your life in there.
Brother Simmons, do you have a pastor, advisor, counselor? Do you have any criteria for that or advice concerning that?
To have someone in your life? I think it's good if you do have someone or a few, because I think sometimes, you know, you just need to be able to talk to someone. And sometimes they don't do a lot. I remember when I went to Thailand, so I left a larger church, a lot of people, prominent people. If I said their names, you'd know who they were. I remember they were saying to me, "Brother Shemesh, what are you doing? Nobody walks away from a ministry like this to do. What are you doing?" You know, they were questioning. And that's okay. That was just, you know, don't say bad about them. So I got over to Thailand. I remember coming back after a year, and Doug Fisher was in town preaching. Some of you know him, some of you don't. And I remember sitting down and saying, "Now, Brother Fisher, do you have a moment where I can just kind of talk?" He goes, I said, "Well, I just want to sort of bounce some things off you about what I'm doing in Thailand." And he said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, so when I get up, you know, I do this. And then normally I will spend my day doing this." And I'm looking at him and I'm waiting for, or, you know, and I ran through all of this and I do this and I'm trying to reach people this way. And I went through it and I said, "Do you think that's okay?" And he said, I think that's okay. And I said, "Oh, great, thank you." And I just felt so much better. I walked away thinking, I'm okay. I just needed that. I needed someone to just say that. Right? So I think sometimes you need someone. And I think if you can find someone who is temperate, thoughtful, careful, someone who loves you or thinks or wants your best, that's not a bad person to be able to talk to. But I think it's helpful if you have that. I think ministry can be very lonely. If it's lonely anyway, by the way. Okay, because I'll tell you why it's lonely. Because God separates you unto himself. He puts something around you that only lets people in a certain way, but they can't come in all the way. And it's a mark of a man of God to carry that loneliness. So ministry is that anyway. But I think if you can, have somebody or find a few, I think everybody needs, I think it's helpful if you have it.
How do you distinguish that between peers?
Well, you know, if you had the right peer, he might be the right one. So there are some people in my life that God uses a different way. So there's a man in my life who's a pastor of a church, does very well, has his own family, his own ministry, lives in a different country to me. I don't talk a lot, maybe once a month, but he just has a way of calming me. So when I'm worked up about something, which is my personality to be anxious and to overstress and to overthink. So on one hand, people get helpful things because I think about things. On the other side of that, I think too much sometimes. He just has a calming ability. He's just able to say some things. I think, and I really see him as a gift of God to me, him being able to do that. So he's a peer, but he contributes in that way. So sometimes they're not everything, but they're something, if you can find that. And if you don't have it, it might be, well, Lord, maybe you just need to help show me who that would be. If you can get someone a bit older and wiser, that's always good. If they've been ahead of you a little bit, because then when you're stepping on something, they'll go, yeah, right. Well, this is what I did. You know, oh, okay, right, that's helpful. You don't have to fall in every hole. Sometimes some other people fell in them already, and they'll tell you, oh, watch out, there's a hole there. And you go, oh, thank you. Now, you tell some people that anyway, watch out, there's a hole there. They've got to walk in it anyway. They just go, and then I'll go, oh, there's a hole there. And you go, yeah, there's a hole there.
For us young guys that are at Bible college and some of us plan on going to the ministry, maybe something in your life that you saw or in just younger people going into the ministry, what are some things that we got to watch out or some things that we're going to fail in or things that we got to do right in order to be used by God?
Yeah, well, this is a broad question. I think I would say marry well if you haven't married, because that's probably the biggest single earthly thing that will affect you. And it can be really good or not. Right? And it can have an effect on you that actually can hold you back somewhat, that you will never quite be what you could have been. So that's you just want to really, that's a big one. And I suggest, you look for the spiritual person. And that doesn't mean they just go to church. Right? So I'd take the fat girl who's spiritual over the beautiful girl who's not. That's the truth. Because after a little while, that won't matter as much. But the other will linger on and on and on. Right? So be wise about that and really be discerning about the heart of that person that you're about to, commit the rest of your life to, because it's going to have a lot of effect on you. And then I would say, learn God's ways. Learn what he's like. Okay, because a lot of people, when they talk about God, it just sounds a lot like them. Okay, we tend to shape God in our own image. Your God seems to just sound an awful lot like you. The problem with that is that you will not, that's your misthoughts and not his actuality. So you've got to learn him as he is, not as you want him to be or you think he is. You've got to learn him as he is. Why does that matter? Okay, it matters because the thing that God blesses the most, more than anything else, is God blesses himself. Okay, and that's one of the most important things you will understand. So what does that mean? God blesses himself. When God sees himself in you, that's what he blesses. When you do what he would do, that's what he blesses. When you respond as he responds, that's what he blesses. He blesses himself. So there is a stream of blessing you can get into, and you've got to learn him as he is. Now, he's revealed in the scriptures. Okay, and you can read the scriptures and study him. and learn what he's like, and talk to people who know him well. I remember one of my Thais said to me one day, a saved Thai, we were driving in the car, this person had been saved, and they said to me, can I ask you a question? And I said, they were driving, I was sitting, a long drive somewhere, and I said, yes. And so my question is, what is God like? It was a night drive, we were driving at night, and I went, well, that's a good question. That's a good question. Now, this was a saved person who had his own walk with God, but it was a good question. And I said, well, he's like this. And we had a little talk for a while. So learning him is important, because everything you do, he is God, and he's going to respond according to his character, to his nature, to his ways. He's not going to respond according to what you think he should do. And if you get that wrong, sometimes you'll be bitterly disappointed in your heart, and you'll be really questioning what's going on. Okay, there's no failure there with God, but you have assumed something that is not correct. So I had a missionary come to me many years ago, and he called up. And he asked if he could have an appointment. He lived quite a few hours away. And I said he could come. And he came, and he was very despondent. And I won't, share all the personal things. But he was very despondent. And he was trying to manage his personal despondency and not say too much. He had supporting churches and others. And he was very despondent. And he said to me at one point, I remember him sitting there, and he said, he started to break down. He said, I go out and do this every day, and I do this, and I've done this for the Lord, and I've done this, and then he did this, and this happens to me. And I thought, You see, what he had done, he had thought in his own mind, I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing this, so you're supposed to do this. And because that wasn't happening, he was very despondent. Okay, so he had a misunderstanding about what the Lord is like. There was no failure with God. There never is, by the way. There never can be. It's not him, it's us. Okay, so I would say that if you can, learn him and try to understand him as he is and try to be like him, because he'll bless that. And when you get assailed, you do what he did. And when they say things about you and that's not true, you do what he did. Who opened not his mouth. Okay? You do what he did. The problem is usually what we do is just what everybody else does. Okay, but you do what he did, and it'll set you apart, and it'll be pleasing to him, and he blesses that.